I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We already know that it's a jungle out there. From Tinder tales to Hinge horror stories, I have to admit that I actually kind of love to live vicariously through my friends' experiences of the dating world and all that it has, or has not, got to offer. Now, when you throw being a mom into the mix, things can get a little bit sticky. When do you tell potential suitors you have children? When do you introduce them to your children? And how do you make time to actually date between work, your kids' extracurricular activities, co-parenting, etc., etc., etc.? The jungle just turned into a desert filled with landmines. Welcome to episode 8 of Black Ballad Presents The Survival Guide, a podcast about how we survive and thrive as Black mothers in Britain today. I'm Jen Della Benson, head of editorial at Black Ballad, and this episode is about dating.
I want to believe we all planned our lives as children. I don't know if it was planning per se. I'd say maybe more we just kind of had this fantasy that had kind of been conditioned into us. So, you know, your typical... traditionally, what you hear culturally is, you know, go to uni, get married, have children, that kind of thing. And I'd say that was probably what I based my expectations of what life would be like as I grew up on. I thought I would do the traditional 1, 2, 3.
That's Wumi Etty, a food entrepreneur and the owner of Angry Black Kitchen, and of course, a mum. Like many of us, she grew up knowing the conservative expectations of family when it came to relationships and motherhood.
Our parents failed to realise that even though they're telling us to do ABC, if we've seen it go CBA around us with our cousins, our aunties, our uncles, whatever it may be, then we're just like, oh, but this person did that and that person did that. So there's this kind of hypocrisy that goes on culturally. Growing up, my mum wasn't in like... well, she was married and then they divorced or separated. And that dynamic in itself, I think, also affected how I saw things and what my expectations were and how I put like this much more heavy expectation on how everything must be perfect or else my life will be X, Y, and Z. And it's not worked out that way for me in the slightest. So here we are.
Wumi's path to motherhood was, I guess you can say it was complicated. And not without its fair share of drama.
I fell pregnant at 19. Funny enough, I fell pregnant at 19 for the second time. So I'd gotten pregnant prior and I'd had an abortion. And I think that, I don't know how my brain didn't compute that this is when you should probably fix up your life and not make the same mistake again. But it happened again, I want to say a year later. And at that moment it was like, okay, so this seems to be the reality I'm going to have to live. It was met with a lot of conflict in the family. You know, my mom and dad, as much as they're not together, I think that even created a bigger wedge in what they had because they had opposing views on how or the decision I should take, which was a lot to deal with. You know, I'm going through this thing within myself and for whatever reason, because I was 19 at the time, keep in mind. So I didn't have a say in any of it. there was only so much I could say. That my dad wanted one thing, my mom wanted another, and it was just me stuck in the middle of this thing with no authority there, even though it was my body and my being and my life that was absolutely drastically going to change. The first time around, I had the abortion and I didn't tell my mom. And then I was lying there in this room by myself and I was like, yo, this is mad. And so I called my mom. I chickened out. I called my mom and the nurse was like, no, she was a Nigerian nurse and she was like, you shouldn't have done that, you know. I can only imagine the trouble it would cause at home. You could have given off the phone and we would have lied. And I get it. I know why they know they need to do that. And in itself, that's a noble thing for them to do, so to speak. But there's also part of me that was lying there. If anything goes wrong, my mom will have my head whether I'm dead or alive. So I need to tell her. And then after that, there was just a lot of friction in my house. And my mom started behaving like, you know, why didn't you tell me? Can you come? Can you come? And in my head, I'm just like, you've never cultivated an environment for me to have this kind of discussion with you. And that's why. And so that friction that happened at that moment was when I should have listened to the don't do it advice, because then the second time round, it only amplified that for me. And my mom was like, no, you know, because she knew of the first one, she was like, I've spoken to them. You know, my mom's really superstitious. You know, she's called Nigeria. They said if I have another abortion, I would die. I was like, bruv, I really don't think it's that deep. But I'll tell you a story. I like stories. I was still going to get rid of the baby at the time. It's crazy saying this now because she's really much, very much alive. But I went to the clinic. I got on the bus. I got off the bus right outside it. The bus was blocking my view, so I didn't look around. My mom's car was across the road. And if I'd waited for 2 seconds and waited for that bus to go, I'd have seen my mom's car and I wouldn't have gone straight in. But I went straight in. And as I'm walking in, my mom is walking out, shouting at all the nurses, if she's here, nobody must give her anything. Did it scattering the whole of this abortion clinic. And I was there, I walked in to just fire, like just, even today as I try to visualize, that's what I see, it was just smoke on fire because they were shouting at her, she was shouting at them, she was screaming my name. And I walked straight into that and she said, let's go. Took me, sat in the car. And it was in that moment that I realized I didn't have a choice. That this was it. And she did this thing where she tried to make me think that, you know, she was going to help me, she was going to have my back and all of this. And I suppose that was the mother in her, the softer mother in her, trying to be like, okay, maybe this is what woman needs to hear. And that's not kind of how it went. And eventually after I had Dunny, I was kind of out of her house before Dunny turned 2. So yeah, it wasn't that I decided to. I'd say it was a mixture of fate and my mom's perseverance and my mom always likes to remind me, if it wasn't for me, would I only be here? I'm like, bruv, okay, but she's here and I've raised her. Leave me alone. But yeah, it wasn't a personal decision, but it was a decision that I'm grateful was put on me, because I don't think I'd be where I am if not for my daughter. Cliche as that sounds.
So Wumi got pregnant at 18, had her daughter at 19, and then decided to tick the other things that she was meant to do off her list. She went back to college and then on to university.
Education was my main priority, because in the situation I was in, marriage wasn't an option between the two parties, between me and the man. So that was already completely that was not an option from the jump, to be quite honest. So for me, it was like, okay, go back to college, go to uni, graduate, at least, you know, everyone kind of get off your back. You've done 2 of the 3, you know, there's some people that don't do any for whatever reason. Like it was very much a try and make everyone as happy as physically possible. But in doing that, you don't think of how much of a toll that's going to take on yourself. In my case, that was not something I thought of. I hadn't thought it through at all. And that in itself was a lot, but that was kind of the priority I went for. Do college and uni, then hopefully along the line, somewhere in between that, marriage or the prospect of marriage will pop up and that will happen. I'd say initially it was very much a cultural and family pressured thing, but as I've gotten older and I've gone through relationships and situationships and entanglements and the whole shebang, I realized that now I'm at a place where, yes, I would like it for myself, but it's not a be all or end all for me at this point. So yeah, that's kind of where I am on that.
Deciding that you're ready to date and actually dating are two completely different things. The whole finding a partner thing can be thorny and complicated. And when you have the welfare and the eyes of little people to think about, the stakes can feel pretty high. Wumi generously shared her journey so far.
You know, for me, I'll be really honest, dating was not something I really understood the concept of. Aside from what you kind of see on TV, there was no other blueprint for me to follow, so to speak. When you watch something, you know, they meet, they go on a date, and it's all rom-com-y. But in reality, even prior to my daughter, I hadn't really dated. It was very much just, oh, you're sleeping with this person, or as we'd call it back in the day, you're linking this person. And you know, and that's what led to the pregnancy in the first place. So even after that, it was very much, okay, what do I want to do now? How do I go about that? And I want to say my first thing after that was about maybe 6 months to a year after, and I was kind of seeing this person for about a year and a half after that. That wasn't really something with any prospect. It was just me kind of going back to what I knew. And then I'd say the first proper relationship I had, or dating experience I had, was about just under 2 years after I had her. And I think at that moment, I was very much still in the, oh, I'm looking for someone to marry. Like, that's the thing I need to do at this point. So anytime someone came along, that was kind of what I looked at. And this first person I met, he was an older person. And as far as in my head, I was like, oh, this aligned, you know, he's older, that's what he's gonna want, that's what I want, or I thought I wanted. So I kind of pursued that and went into it, like, you know, when you like deep dive into something really unnecessarily, but literally just dove straight into it. And that was interesting, because I think in that experience and that dynamic at the time, I had my own place, he kind of moved in or was at his uni and just finishing his master's, and I thought, you know, I'm gonna make life easy, we're gonna be together, all of that. And it was just very much a thing where he came into my daughter's life, and she, that was the first male figure she'd actually been around like that. So things moved very fast. It was a thing where after a while, you know, he'd be like, oh no, she should call me daddy, and very much your typical Nigerian kind of dynamic there. It was like, I'm going to come in and be the father figure and she's got to call me daddy, and that's what we're going to do. And in the end, it didn't work out. Kicked him out of my house. It was all just very dramatic. And after that, it was like, I was like, no, I'm not doing this anymore. I can't do this, because now Dunny's asking, where's daddy, so to speak. And she was about three and a half, maybe going on four. So, you know, this is when you're kind of remembering things. So she kind of held on to that for a little while. Funny enough, she has kind of brought it up. Do you remember that person? I'm like, no, I don't. What are you talking about? No, this is your imagination, sis. And I think there was a part of me that was conscious of that at the time. I was like, this is not what I want her to be dealing with or seeing now, especially because she's a girl. And I was also conscious of the implications that will have for her in her future and when she decides she wants to start dating. So I kind of just stopped with the whole dating seriously thing. I was like, you know what, I'm just going to enjoy my life. Whatever happens, happens. And that's kind of what I did. I was still at uni at this point. So this was the second year of uni. So I was still at uni. And it was just very much go to uni. She'd be at nursery. If there was someone at uni I was talking to, or I was having a fling with, whatever it was, that was kind of where I was at then, because I didn't know how to. After that experience, I was just like, I can't do that again. I'm not willing to do that again. Maybe that route isn't for me. I'll figure it out as I go along. And that's what I did for quite a while, to be honest. So I suppose I didn't do like your traditional kind of dating, going out on dates and all of that. It was, if I went out somewhere and I met someone and we were cool, we'd exchange numbers, we'd talk many a times, it didn't go anywhere. And I think because of where I was mentally in the kind of state of mind that I don't think I want this, like if I don't see the prospect there immediately, I wasn't trying to do it. That was kind of the boat I was on for a little while, until about 2017 when I met someone. But I feel like the difference with this was we went on one date, and you know what, I repeat cycles. I'm telling you this and I realize you did the same thing, sis. So I didn't learn the first time. Met him. I think with him it was a bit different for me because we had grown up together. So we went to the same primary school together. So there was a part of me that was like, oh, the stars are aligning. Oh, this is not a coincidence. It's meant to be. Look at that. And once again, I turned into, what's that guy that does the diving? Michael Phelps, I'd be whoever. And I dive straight into it, head first, all of that. And again, about a year and a half. I lied. It wasn't even a year and a half. Did it even reach a year? Something about that, you know, got there and the same thing. And I was back in this place. So by like beginning of 2019, I was back at the place that I'd said that I never wanted to be at. And I feel like the ramifications for that was like having to, at this point, Dunny's now at a stage where I have to explain this to her because she's very aware. You know, she sees that, she's heard the arguments and she's seen me crying or being upset or him shouting and being, so it's like now I have to sit her down and explain it to her. That's kind of how my journey has been with dating per se. It's either I'm throwing myself straight into something because I feel like it has potential to be what my end goal is, which is marriage, or I don't take anything seriously because you're not worth my time and I don't see any prospects, but you know, you're good for a bit of, you know, they call it entanglements now, so I suppose that's what I've been doing. It's either an entanglement or it's me deep diving into lava. There's not been an in-between for me. Yeah, that's kind of how the dating journey for me has gone with my daughter. And there's a part of me that's really conscious of how as a young girl she sees that, and then she would then go on to see relationships in kind of any way, and what she feels like or how she feels it's meant to go or how it goes. And there's a part of me that's really conscious of that's not what I want her to have. And I say that because when I then look at what I saw growing up on how things have ended up for me, I strongly believe there's a direct correlation there. There is an element of me that's like, okay, is this person worth being around, Dunny? Is this going to be beneficial for the both of us? But then there's also a part of me that who I am and how I love is very do or die or nothing at all. There's no in between for me.
There is a lot to be learned from the things that we try that don't work out. And from Wumi's experiences, she's come to solid conclusions about what she can and cannot accept when it comes to potential partners.
Going forward, I'm very much at a place where there is no plan. Whatever happens, happens. But I think there's a part of me that's really conscious of me not wanting to dive into anything anymore. Me wanting there to be some kind of foundation where it's like, I know this is the right thing I'm doing before I commit to anything. And I think like that's what I've not waited for that before I've tried to commit into something or throw myself into something, or I won't even say coerce, but convince a guy that, yeah, this is it. This is the moment. Let's just do this. And I think that's something I've just learned from this last experience, where it's like, you have to be conscious of how a man coming into a home where there's a child, and that's now something he has to take on board. And that's something I'm big on. Anyone that wants to date me or have any kind of relationship with me, I need you to know that it's not just me. And that's a non-negotiable as well. It's like, I can't just be like, okay, you know, I'm going to put her to the side for a little bit. Let's see how this goes. It's literally, if we're on the phone and, you know, you're trying to do sexy talk or whatever, the child might burst in and say, mommy, I want water. That's something you're going to have to know that comes with the territory and be willing to take on. And I'll be honest, from what I've experienced, I don't think a lot of people are ready to take that on. A lot of men are willing to take that on. You know, at first it's like, okay, no, it's fine. But then as they realize that, one, this is not their child. I think there are many factors. It's not their child. It's this responsibility that they've been thrown into because, you know, you're not seeing her grow up and you can't, you know, you don't know her, who she is as a person. You're coming into that. And then the burden of feeling like, oh, you know, you've not gone through whatever, like with my ex, one of his things was, oh, you know, with you, I'm not going to have those firsts. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, but you knew that coming into this. And now 6 months down the line, you're saying you weren't going to have firsts because you were aware of Dunny before you approached me. So I think that's something. It's about, you know, knowing that a lot of men are not ready for that kind of responsibility. Even the ones that become fathers of their own children, they're not ready for it. Talk less of a man that, you know, that's not his child. And that's something I've come to terms with and I'm pretty okay with. So it's very much like from the jump, if that's something that's going to affect you in any way, shape or form, I'd rather you said at the start. But I feel like even putting that to them at first can be a bit off-putting. But for me, it's like, if I don't do it now, when am I going to have the opportunity to do it? And so I'm very much in place that I'm just like, if it's hard for you to deal with at the start, it's probably never going to get better or easier. So let's just leave it at that. And that's kind of how I'm taking it now. There's no plan. It's just these are the conditions, these are the terms. And if any of those don't sit well with you, then we probably shouldn't bother moving forward.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Now Wumi's in her late 20s and a decade on from the younger version of herself who felt she had to please her family or make up for their disappointments, the dynamic between herself and her parents gives her the space to pursue relationships and marriage at her own pace.
Everybody in my family understands me enough to know that you cannot come to me with any kind of pressure because I will block you, I will lock you at the heart. Like, it doesn't work for me. And I think everyone has finally grasped that. Occasionally, my mum will be like, oh, come, let's go to this 50th or something, you know, hoping that, you know, she knows I'm going to dress up and I'm going to look nice. I think that was one day I was actually talking to her. It was just after my birthday last year. And I was telling her about, oh, where are all the men? Like, everybody's useless. I was just ranting to her. And I like it. When I have conversations with her, she never kind of pushes for anything. She just listens and she takes it in. And then 2 days later, she's like, oh, my friend is having a 50th. Sad. Let's go. I was like, okay, I see what you're doing. I appreciate it. Got there, no prospects. But, you know, it's the fact that she's not doing it. She's not trying to pressure me per se. She's just, if I mention it to her, she'd support it. But if I don't, she's not pushing for it. And I respect that. My dad, anybody I bring to my dad will tell you he's not this one. So I don't even bother. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think my parents are a godsend in the fact that as much as I've not done things the way it should have been done, I've also not let them down. Like, I've done quite well for myself, all things considering. So I'm nearly 30. It's not me you're going to pressure. They know their child. You know when you know what, the two people that decided to procreate, when they know what they're like, they know who they've raised. It's not me. You can't. My peers can't pressure me. My parents can't. Nobody can pressure me. At this point, it's very much a whatever Wumi's doing, Wumi's doing. Like my mom, there was a day she said to me, she was like, "Ah, you would have found a husband if you dated white men." I said, over my dead body. And she always throws that in sometimes. She's always just like, "Ah, whoa, if it was Oyinbo now." I said, "Don't bother." So she knows that, you know, of all the people that I may bring home, it can never be a white man. Of all the people she can even decide she wants to introduce me to, it can't be that. So it's very much a understanding your child's dynamic we have going on and knowing what's acceptable for me and what's not. And I respect that. So, and I'm just grateful that neither of them have ever tried to like matchmake me because, it's very respectable across the board. Everyone's like, okay, let's just respect what Uri's doing. Either way, she's doing well. She's not struggling. So she'll figure it out as she goes.
Okay, I know some of you flinched when Wumi said dating a white guy would be over her dead body. But before you get vexed, Wumi explains.
I don't know if it's an idealistic thing, but for me, it's just like, I can't be my true and authentic self around someone that I have to either explain my being to and my race to and who I am as a human being. I can't be my authentic self if I have to explain the little things, like why I need a headscarf on my head at night, or for me to sleep and it comes off and you don't know to put it back on. It's really tiny things, but I want to be able to come home and I've had something happen to me outside and I tell you this has happened and I don't have to explain it more than this happened to me today and you understand why there's either frustration or hurt or anything there. Whereas I cannot just imagine going home and saying, oh yeah, this lady did X, Y, and Z to me today. And then you're like, oh, why is that a big deal? At that point, I'm not having to explain my blackness. I'm trying to explain race to you. I'm trying to explain microaggressions to you. All of these things that if you were my person, you'd know and you'd understand my experiences in the outside world. And your home is your safe haven. If you don't feel like you're with a like-minded person at home, then going out into this world that's set up against you is a scam. It's a big scam. I feel like, yeah, for me personally, dating outside my race is the biggest disservice I could do to myself, to my child. And also, I have a black, I don't want my child to feel outside in her home as well. That's another thing. Because having subsequent children after having one child that's blackety black is insane. Because I don't want her to ever feel othered in her home. There's a chance that may already happen. That may possibly happen even if I date a black man that, you know, takes one, because she's going to be aware of the fact that, you know, the rest of the children, her siblings are, you know, they've got the same mom and dad. And, you know, those things that I've kind of preempted may possibly happen in her life. For her to now be in a home where her siblings don't look like her is not something I can't do.
If we're going to have an honest conversation about dating and motherhood, we have to speak about the fact that respectability politics often come into play. Single motherhood in general is often looked down upon, but the term black single mother has a special sort of scorn reserved for it. I personally know of women who have stayed in relationships that they really, really shouldn't have, just to avoid the stigma of being a black single mom. While I've seen others rush to settle down with someone who they're settling for, and it ends disastrously. We can't pretend that these pressures don't exist, and it's important that we speak about it. If not to expose the illogical nature of the microscope that is placed upon our lives as black women, then to free anyone who feels like they're experiencing these feelings or pressures alone. Wumi shares her thoughts.
For me personally, I think it's really important to live your life for you, and I think that's what a lot of us forget, because I have, like, my first situation, for example, was me wanting to do respect. I was like, I found someone that's ready to take her on, like, this is it. And initially I stayed through bullshit. Like, first thing happened, I was like, okay, no, it's not a big deal. Second thing, red flag, no, not a big deal. Third thing, I was like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not mad. Like, if any of my friends came to me and said that was happening to them, I wouldn't do it. I've watched my friend do the whole respectability thing, and whew, the things I've seen, not things I'd want to go through. So it's really important to know that if you're doing what you want to be doing, nothing else would matter. I think, and I know when you say that, it's like people be like, oh yeah, but you're confident, you're this, and you know, you can, but it all of that's built up. I wasn't always like this, but there's no one that can come to me and say, oh, X, Y, and Z, or it's even little things like, we talk about respectability, but even as a single mother dating, there's a whole respectability thing that comes into that. Because when I go out, people see me and they're like, oh, how's your daughter? Where's your daughter? It's like, even little things, they think you can't go out and enjoy yourself. And you remember that these people are not raising your children. These people don't clothe, feed, house your children or your child. And once you figure that out and you understand that that's the important thing, if you can do that for your child, unless the person ticks all the boxes you need in a relationship, not just because of what everyone else sees looking in, but because what you're feeling inside the home, settling really should not be an option in any capacity. And I know a lot of women do it, and there's a thing where, you know, even outside of having a child, they kind of settle because they get into an age and they have to be married, etc. It's not worth it. Your mental health is really important, and motherhood in itself tests your mental health like no other. So for you raising your child to be doing you basketballs inside your brain, and then man that's moving mad to come and be adding to that, it's not worth it. That's not your son, baby girl. It's not worth it, not at all. Like, these last few months in this lockdown COVID malarkey, I look up because this is me looking at the world, has made me realize how mentally, I don't like to use the word exhausting, but I think that's the best word to use, being a parent is. And you shouldn't take on more than you need to. The child is your duty, that part due. But don't do that for any man or for any auntie that's looking in, or any religious establishment that's telling you you need to do that, or any peers that are like, oh, me, I'm married, and you, and it's not worth it. Because I can only imagine what it's like trying to raise children and then being married and having marital problems and then having a career and having career. It cannot be worth it in any. I'm a big advocate on taking care of your mind. And I say this as someone who's spent the whole of this morning crying, unprovoked, like just unprovoked. And I look at my life, the only things that are really doing me is me being a parent and me trying to run a business in this mess of a state of a world. I can only imagine how much more, if there were other factors coming in, how mad somebody would feel. And I don't think any kind of wanting to please anyone outside of your home should affect that in any capacity ever.
I think that's sound advice. Now, finally, of course, I had to ask Wumi what it is that helps her to survive and thrive this wild ride of parenting.
I'd say having a solid set of people around me has helped me on my hardest days. Like the old saying goes, it takes a village to raise a child. Like, honestly, I have a little village around me, and whenever it feels like everything is just going wrong, whether it be regarding Duni or just regarding the things that directly affect Duni, being whether it's, you know, something in the home or something with the business, having people that stand up and show up for me every time and are happy to be like, oh, I'll come and take her if this is that, or I'll come and do this, or I'll, whatever it may be, has made this journey. The sailing is not, it's not smooth, but you know, we haven't shipwrecked yet, and that's because I have solid people on the ship with me. And I'd say, like, on a day-to-day thing, up until Corona kind of came welling in, I'd say it was like exercising. Going to the gym, that's one of my top things to do, just go bang weights and, you know, start the day good, get, I can't remember what that orphan is that goes through your body, but the one that makes you happy, endorphins, there we go, it's one of the orphans. When I get the endorphins in the morning and I come home, wake up, get ready for school and all of that, and that was it. Right now, I'd say I don't have anything that's getting me through the day to day, and because the day-to-day is very blurry at the moment. Honestly, just the child in itself, watching her go to sleep at night is my day-to-day thing at the moment, because it's like she goes to sleep, I look at her and I know the world is her oyster and I'm going to do everything I can to get her to where she needs to be. And in this moment, she's peaceful and she's content because she has a bed to sleep on. She has food in her belly. And that's really all I can do right now, because I don't know what the state of the world is going to be when she's grown. I don't know what's going to be in the next 6 months. So just knowing she's healthy, fed, housed is enough for now.
This has been episode 8 of Black Ballad Presents The Survival Guide. Thanks once again for listening, and remember to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and also please, please rate and review us in Apple Podcasts. This episode was written by me, Jendela Benson, and produced by Christina Moore of Don't Skip.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.